Hello, Gallatin Valley. You're listening to KGVM Bozeman on FM 95.9. This is Dr. Nurse Nancy welcoming you to Body Politic, a show about how our ability to control what we do with our bodies and what happens to our bodies shapes our life experiences. This show is a little different from most Body Politic shows because today we're in Butte at our neighbor community radio station, KBMF, 102.5 FM. From mining to prostitution to pollution, Butte has a lot of history in terms of how what happens to people's bodies shaped their life experiences. But before we go more deeply into some of that history, I'd like to start by talking with two guests. Clark Grant is station manager of KBMF, and Ann Zaldapetri is the founding treasurer of the Butte America Foundation, which is the licensee of KBMF. She's also a founding member of KFGM 105.5 FM in Missoula. Butte America Foundation's mission is to provide the information and tools to uphold the tenets of social justice. Ann and Clark, welcome to Body Politic. Could you please start by telling us why you think having a community radio is important and how community radio can be connected to upholding the tenets of social justice?
All right, I'll start. I think that community radio stations in general are community building, and people who are oppressed or marginalized, whose voices aren't typically heard, have an opportunity to have a show and present the world from their own perspective. And we get to amplify that. We don't translate it. We don't modify it. We don't turn it into something else. We allow people whose voices aren't typically the loudest to have a megaphone on our community radio stations. And there's lots of examples of how that works in both Missoula and Butte, where people who typically aren't heard on the radio and their point of view usually isn't expressed have the opportunity to do that. So, for example, in Missoula, we've got a young man named Chester, and he is an adult that lives in group care, and he describes himself as somebody who is a sociopath and on the autism spectrum. And he had the opportunity to interview one of our city council members recently. Wow. And it was honestly one of the most refreshing interviews I've ever heard, because he is not shy about what he doesn't know. And so his questions were penetrating in terms of the Missoula master plan. Missoula is going through a process where we are planning urban development in our city center for the next 10 years. And so Chester had a lot of questions about what people who typically don't have means are going to do with this new master plan. How's that going to affect people who don't have the economic wherewithal to buy into the latest coffee shop or go to the biggest restaurant or whatever? And he was unafraid to ask those questions directly. So it was brilliant. And I think an example of why it's important to have a community radio station, and for him to have a show on our station, and then that branches him out into interviewing politicians and people in power, and it's sort of surprising to them. But Gwen Jones was the city council person who he interviewed, and she loved it. So she's going to come on his show periodically through this process so that she can answer his questions. So I think that the amplification of those marginalized voices is really important. That's the key to community radio station.
So I read online that you are a passionate believer in the transformative power of radio. So is that sort of what that story sort of illustrates, that transformative power? Yes.
Yeah. People make fun of me for saying that transformative power of radio thing. Like I should get it tattooed on my body. I say it so much. But I also have to reflect on the life transforming and just life-changing experience of having a relationship with Clark that came about through KBGA, the college radio station. And Clark and I probably in our regular lives wouldn't have had much opportunity to overlap, just as people living in you know, older versus younger spheres and, you know, professional versus student and all of those things. And yet we had the opportunity to meet and to get to know each other. And boy, I can't even begin to talk about how much it's changed my life. It made me a musician. I learned about
really
how to make radio. I learned about how to interview people, how to all of it. I learned from Clark through KBGA.
Wow.
So when I first had the idea to have a show on KBGA with my on the radio partner at the time, Teresa Waldorf, I was interested in community radio and had done a bunch of reading about these small radio stations and, frankly, pirate radio. I was kind of interested in all of that. So then we get to go on the radio, and I meet this guy who has these same interests and is interested in building one in Butte, and the whole thing took off from there, and I can't imagine what my life would be like if that hadn't happened.
So, Clark, how has working on this effort been transformative for you, and how do you think the station is transformative for Butte?
Yeah, I think I've heard from a number of people in the recent past that they didn't know Butte was missing this until now the station's almost 4 years old. And I wonder where all these people, our 65 volunteer DJs, where did they spend their time before the station came around? I think for a lot of them, it's a point to connect with people that they would otherwise never meet. And so I see that phenomenon that happened with me and Anne, who, like she was saying, we're just in totally different places in life, you know, socially, economically, or the age difference, you know. But we came together around this forum, you know, that is the community radio station, or in that instance, the college radio station. So I see that happening at KBMF a lot where, you know, people who are, for instance, like there's one gentleman here who's done so much for us. His name is Rodney Norman, and he's a master machinist, lifelong carpenter, and he's been connected to so many people that he's helped that he otherwise would have never met. He'll go to, for instance, Norma Jean's house and fix her plumbing. And you know, there's all these real ramifications that go beyond people's time on the air. And the signal, I think, that people, when they tune into KBMF, in a way, I like to believe that they hear that, you know, that behind the Led Zeppelin song that someone is playing is this huge community of interconnected people that, for me at least, it's very much like a family. So, yeah, I think I see it over and over at KBMF, it improving people's lives, my own included. And that's what keeps me passionate. It keeps me coming back, you know, to the office every day.
I'm wondering how much of that has to do for this station with the fact that it is in Butte, which is, you know, not Bozeman, not the fastest growing small city anywhere and stuff like that. different, you know, I was walking around earlier this morning and lots of storefronts empty, no businesses in them, but there were clearly some community efforts going on. It looked like possibly some shelters, some places where people are receiving meals. I wonder, is there something about Butte itself that gets expressed in the radio station also?
Yeah, KBMF is very Butte, I would say. You know, and we make a point to, especially our talk programming, to focus on conversations about Butte. And I've never lived a place that was so proud of itself despite its flaws. And, you know, people are really proud to be from here. I'm not from here. I should say that right off the bat. But, yeah, Butte is struggling. But then again, I think that community radio can be this powerful tool for change no matter the city it's taking place in, or the rural area or the reservation. Or, you know, Ann and I have done a tour of native stations around the state, and we see the same thing playing out there. So, yeah, there are things that are unique and weird and funky about Butte, and those come across on the station, but I don't think that KBMF is working here because Butte. I think community radio just works, you know, wherever it's taking place.
Okay. So I read that the Butte America Foundation got a grant to do sort of an oral history project, and it's called Verdigris?
Yep, Verdigris.
Verdigris. Can you explain why that name and what the project is about?
Yeah, when copper gets at patina, that green is verdigris. That's that color. Okay. And so a lot of the project is, the grant is from the National Endowment for the Humanities, and which is kind of it's a huge blessing, you know, but it's one of those be careful what you wish for things, because now it's, you know, all this work. And also the NEH is under constant threat of being defunded, and which is not new, but and, you know, for instance, the two liaisons that we initially made contact with for the grant no longer work there. The program officer that we were working with is now gone too. So, I mean, a lot of people have left the NEH, and anyway, there are issues there, but it's a $30,000 award from them, and it's called a challenge grant. So we have to raise an additional $30,000. and it takes place over 4 years. So it's a $60,000 project, and from 2017 to 2021. And one component is to record and transcribe 100 new oral histories, building on the collection of Mary Murphy and Teresa Jordan and others that have worked with the Butte Silver Bow Public Archives over the decades since the early 80s. And so we're adding to that collection of oral histories, conducting 100 new interviews. And then there are three radio series that are being produced out of it. One is called Life Underground, which is 20 one-hour documentaries that I'm tasked with producing, which is terrifying. And then one is Mining City Reflections, which is hosted by a local author, Marian Jensen. And that one focuses on women's histories and immigrant stories, and that'll be 25 episodes, 15 minutes long each. And then Dick Gibson's, he's a local historian and geologist, and that one is called Butte, America's Story, and that's 365 five-minute episodes. And all of those then will be marketed and distributed nationally, ideally, to highlight Butte's national and international significance due to its mining history and its contributions.
And so how closely do you all work with the archives, which are just right across the street, right?
Yeah, they're just right up there. I spend the better part of 2 days a week there, and the director, Ellen Crane, has been very supportive. Aubrey Japp, who's their administrative assistant, conducts the oral histories. We do those together. And so, yeah, they're extremely involved. And that's the point of the grant, the NEH. It's called Creating Humanities Communities. That's the initiative. So it's about organizations in rural areas that have never collaborated doing so. And the NEH provides the funding to jumpstart projects like that. So we thought community radio and the archives in Butte would be the perfect match. Luckily, the NEH agreed.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'd like to ask a question. This is Robin Fly, the sidekick of Dr. Nurse Nancy. I'd like to ask a question about making a radio documentary, because I did listen to the Standing Rock piece that you made, and I was quite impressed. So I was thinking, as you were talking about the documentary, hello over there, about the documentaries, the different types of documentaries that you'll produce with this grant. So what was it like in doing this? And Anne, were you at the Standing Rock as well?
We were there at the same time.
We were there at the same time, but I actually went for a different reason and was in a different place at Standing Rock than Clark. And I haven't done much with my audio. Clark produced this poignant and amazing.
Yeah, it has a beginning, middle, and end.
Thank
you. And it's great sound effects. And what does it take to do that? I mean, you're speaking also to the audience of KGBM, and our radio station is much younger than yours.
Sure.
What is it like to make an hour-long documentary, radio documentary?
Yeah, well, we conducted probably 15 hours of interviews, you know, and then from each of those, I might take 8 minutes or less. And, it just takes a ton of time. You know, usually, I guess the measure I go by is that for every completed minute, it takes an hour. And so 60 hours, I don't know if it was quite that much, but you know, I recorded all the music for it too, wrote and recorded the music, and then did all the natural sound recordings while we were out there. But basically the process was we got back from Standing Rock, and I was just reeling from the whole event and the scene, and especially Sophia Walensky, her arm getting blown off, and the kids that were traveling with us having witnessed it. And I just was really in a meditative state almost. And so I came to this office, this is before there was any furniture in here, and I just sat in a dark room it was Thanksgiving Day that I made the show. So the building was quiet, I just turned my phone off, and I just worked on it all day in the dark, alone. And that's what I need for that kind of thing, intense focus. But that one was kind of unique, I felt like, because I was just telling this chronology of a series of events that had just taken place. It was fresh in my memory. That, I think, will be very distinct from the Verdigris documentaries I'll make, because those are research-based. And so they'll be less compelling, I think, less emotional, less conflict-driven. So, it'll be some different approaches. But I think it's helpful, too, to have good friends that you can send drafts to that are not afraid to harshly critique things. So that'd be a word of advice. have a trusted confidant that can help you craft the story better to improve things. But yeah, that one was, I felt really compelled to make it quickly too, and so I just turned it around and got it out. The following program contains material that may not be suitable for children. The views expressed are those of the participants. Energy Transfer Partners, a Fortune 500 company headquartered in Dallas, Texas, is constructing an 1,100-mile, 30-inch diameter pipeline to connect the Bakken oil fields to processing plants in Illinois. The pipeline would transfer up to 570,000 barrels of light sweet crude per day. Along the path of the pipeline, near the Missouri River at Cannonball, North Dakota, is a growing encampment that opposes its construction. They contend that future leakages from the pipeline as it travels under the Missouri River are possible and could jeopardize clean water for millions of people living in the central United States. Calling themselves water protectors, as opposed to protesters, the camps are led by tribal leaders from the Sioux Nation, and as the camps have grown since mid-2016, they are now joined by members of hundreds of other indigenous nations, as well as thousands of non-native allies from around the world. I'm Clark Grant, the manager of KBMF LP 102.5 FM in Butte, Montana, a community radio station started up by the Butte America Foundation. BAMF is a small nonprofit dedicated to social justice and education. I traveled to the site of the camps with KBMF music director and freelance photographer Dark Sevier, as well as KBMF DJ and freelance writer Suzanne Stefanik, known as Zorka on the radio. We went there to cover the story unfolding along Highway 1806 in rural North Dakota. Joining us on the journey were two young men from Butte, both Native Americans, one named Isaiah Otherbull and his friend Alonzo Willis, who we'll hear from later in the program. Our journey began in Butte when we put out the call to KBMF volunteers that we needed a vehicle to make the trip. This man responded.
Well, what really got next to me is the fact that I have been jonesing hard to do something for the station ever since having to unwillingly back away from it.
This is Jim Guidry, one of the first DJs at KBMF, who had to take a hiatus from being on the air last year when he got cancer.
It's one of those things that I see you guys getting to do things, remaining active. I listen to the music. I hear how the music has matured. It's fabulous, and I miss being part of that. I really felt good about being able to do this because, call it an old man wishing for younger days, maybe. But looking back in retrospect, I have to kind of chuckle about some of the things that I went through back in the day. And to help you guys get a sense of what was really going on to where we don't have to depend on our fabulous mainstream media. Notice I said that through clenched teeth. To get something really, you know, out there that is legit. You handled it by looking at it, experiencing it firsthand. You know what's there. That was the main impetus, I guess, for me wanting to do something like this.
Jim loaned us his 1977 Dodge Lindy, which we would use at the camps to conduct interviews on the ground, a kind of mobile recording studio complete with shag carpeting. Our two boys traveling with us, Isaiah and Alonzo, both had thoughts to share on the way out to the camps, where Isaiah had been two times previously. Is this your second trip out?
Third.
Okay, so what were the other ones like?
The first one, basically, I came down for a funeral. My grandpa was a chief Sundance warrior, and he passed away, so we did it traditional. And I had to come in and pay my respects, too, because I went through his Sundance. And you know what a Sundance is, don't you? It's basically fasting for 4 days without food and water, praying the whole time, dancing, flesh offering. Other people don't understand it. They just want to be, like, for it. And you got to have the right mindset to go in there. Go to stairs, prayer, and you start entering your senses.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's the word. They, like, heighten, and basically you can start entering the spirit realm from there. Plus, you see stuff that you don't want to see. It's pretty crazy.
And your grandpa would lead those?
Huh? Yeah, he would. He's a chief of that. One of the Sundances he does in Crow.
Is that what you are, is Crow?
Yeah, I'm an enrolled Crow member of Salaga, but my grandma is a full-blooded Cheyenne, and my grandpa is almost a full-blooded Crow, so I live in Lame Deer.
Do you come to Butte often?
Yeah, that's where my mom lives, so I go, like, spend time with her.
Isaiah's mom is Michael N. Hawk, the director of Indian People's Action, and an outspoken advocate for Indigenous people's rights.
They probably, everybody kind of knows her all over there. Like, she's well-known. She does a lot of nonprofit. She travels all over the world, does a lot of big things. Or she actually went, I guess she's known nationally.
She seems like a really motivated person.
Yeah, she is. She kind of inspires me too to go do what she's doing.
I was going to say, it must have rubbed off, you know?
Yeah, like a role model.
Isaiah's friend Alonzo had never been to the site of the demonstrations before and was curious what we would find there.
I'm Arapaho. I got a little bit of Sioux in me too. Yeah, I'm half Arapaho. I'm enrolled and everything.
Okay.
I was born in Billings, but we moved all over. Then when I was in kindergarten, we just stayed in Butte ever since. And then I moved back to my reservation a couple times. And then I don't know, my place is just Butte though. That's where I like to be.
Yeah, me too.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Body Politic. I am speaking with Ann and Clark at our neighbor community radio station in Butte. They have been talking about what it took to get this station going and why it is so important. They are also in a band called Blue Dream. And I have asked them, and they have agreed, to share two songs with us on this show. The first song is called Dog Song. That's the first one you selected. Could you tell me a little about this song before we take a listen?
Sure. I'm a social work professor, and I work for Walla Walla University. And one of our students was a man named Arlen Edwards. He's since graduated and gone on to do great work. But one day in a class, he told me a story about his dog. And the way he described it was that his female dog, was it male? One of the dogs, there was a pair of dogs and they were married. And one of them got hit by a car.
Ooh.
And he had to bury that dog. And the other dog loved it so much, it dug it up and was carrying it around the yard. And
its head,
and its spinal cord. And so that was the genesis of that song, which ended up being sort of emotional and had some depth to it when I got done writing it all out. But then he agreed to sing and drum on it. And he's a Native American person, so we have this Native drumming and background singing on that song. And then we found out later that he was pretty famous as a singer and a drummer. And so we get to brag that we have a person who won a Grammy on our record.
So this is an example of community radio playing music that is local and that might not have gotten out there otherwise, and it also happens to have a Grammy winner on it, which is not always the case.
She was until I looked. Oh,